Alan, who's part of my talk. Because if it's a small group here, then I can focus. Welcome, everyone. My name's Dwayne Bailey, and I am getting a computer that's trying to connect to WhatsApp. I'll just shift my computer this way so it gets centered on the screen. No? My name is Dwayne Bailey. I'm a co-director with Javier Sola over here of the WordForge project and the WordForge Foundation. And we focused on building localization tools and infrastructure for everyone. That's the topic of my talk. And I read it quickly before I started to make sure that I was actually going to talk about what I say I'm going to talk about. Linux stuff. It's unreliable. I'm going to focus on just building up an idea of the situation in Africa. I'm from South Africa. We translate into the 11 official languages of South Africa. We translate OpenOffice, the Mozilla products, and some Linux-specific things such as desktops, GNOME, KDE. In Africa, we have 200 languages that have more than 1 million mother tongue speakers. So that's the kind of scalability issue we have in terms of localization in Africa, if we believe that that's going to have an impact. And it's a similar situation around the rest of the world. I think we're looking at about 350 languages in the world that have more than 1 million speakers. Proprietary vendors, it becomes a scalability issue just in terms of money if they wanted to add a new language to their product line. So adding the 36th language becomes very, very expensive. And open source strategies allow us to address some of those language issues. In Africa, we're faced with the digital divide, which I like to define as there being four aspects. One is connectivity. In Africa, that's a real problem. Low-cost computing, but we're seeing solutions emerge there. Refurbished computers, one laptop per child, PDAs. And in Africa, something that people ignore is that the cell phone really is a computer that people have, and lots of people have them. We have the highest penetration of cell phone usage in the world. Low-cost software, and that's clearly Linux, although other proprietary vendors want it to be theirs. And localized software, so we've done a lot of that in South Africa, but the rest of Africa, if you consider that we've done 11 languages, one is South African English, which is not that difficult to do. And there's Swahili in OpenOffice. We've got, according to the sums, 189 more to do. So even our work hasn't made a dent. But I want to focus specifically on WordForge. I like the image of the hippo in Africa. It's the African firefighter. A hippo, if it sees a fire, will run and stamp it out. Literally, it will use its big feet and stamp it out. But a hippo can get quite confused if there are lots of fires, and that's really what I want to see happening with localization. Putting an infrastructure in place that lots of people can light fires to localize software, and then I'll leave it up to your imagination who the hippo might be or will be. But it's really local people addressing their issues, creating fires that create this whole groundswell of localization in developing world. But our focus at WordForge is to empower what we call digitally endangered languages, or DEL. So any good computer person loves an acronym. And of course DEL just means you delete. But digitally endangered languages are usually small languages. They're not spoken by a lot of people. In some of the countries we are working in, languages are spoken by 100,000 people. In South Africa, the smallest official language is spoken by 800,000 people. Often these are unsophisticated language communities, but I won't get into the political definition of what unsophisticated might mean. But usually people who don't have access to computers or are poor, generally poor, so sometimes don't even have the resources to make a difference in their language. And they're languages that will be swallowed up through globalization and other forces. So in South Africa specifically, there's a strong influence of English over a lot of other languages. And I like the term localize or be localized. So if you don't, if someone doesn't take action to localize software into their language, they will be localized by whatever they use. So the classic case would be American date formats. If you use American software, you will eventually just use American date formats, even if that's not the social convention in your country, but it just, children at school start using it. We, in South Africa, and probably many other people have seen that, we don't actually write numbers with commas and full stops. We use space and comma. But if you see anyone now, they actually write thousands are separated by a comma and decimal is a full stop. And that's really the influence of being localized by the software that they use. The realities of digitally endangered languages is that we usually have people who are unskilled in using computers. I work with people who can't unzip files and who've never used Excel. They're professional translators, they use Word, they've never used Excel, and if you send them a zip file, everything crashes mentally. You have languages where there's one or two passionate people, and that's it. Those are the resources that you have. People in Africa, bad connectivity, so a proposal that looks at online anything means that nothing will get done. There's no formal standardization. In South Africa, of the 11 languages we have, only two would have any kind of standardization. The other nine are still in the process of having terminology standardized. So the people working on these languages don't even have a basis. They're building that basis. So digitally endangered languages have the worst of everything. The not Dell reality, so these would be, I don't know, let's call them European languages or languages that have had a lot of stuff localized, etc. Often they don't have, especially in the open source market, don't have developed standardized terminology. It might exist in the language, but the users translating into open source might not even have that. It's labor intensive to manage the process of translation. It's geek driven, so all the solutions that are made are designed by people who can program, but not necessarily with an intimate knowledge of what localizers need or what would optimize localization. But at least they have cheap connectivity, which we don't have. So our view of the current localization reality, certainly in open source software, is that it's not going to scale. It's managed fine now, but it's not actually going to reach the 200 languages that we need to. Unless you have a full-time person who can manage just even the process of talking to new volunteers who want to localize a new language. There's silos of knowledge, so you'll get OpenOffice localization has its whole set of rules and requirements. Mozilla sits here, GNOME sits here, Debian sits here. But there's very little cross-pollination. And there's no strategic, it's not a strategic focus at localization, it's a product focus. And you can pick that up if you ask someone even at this conference, so what do? And they say, well, I'm the Dutch OpenOffice localizer. Or often people define it as, I localize OpenOffice into Dutch. So it's almost like they see themselves as part of that silo. There are very few people who say, I localize into Dutch, and see the dominance of their language being the priority. So the problem with that is that we cannot make the really good impact that we could be making by making strategic decisions about what you localize first. So people just randomly localize because they don't know where to even start, meaning that they don't necessarily have the impact that they could have. And communication, there's a communication and information overload if you think that you have to be on all these different places to monitor what's happening. When is this organization going to release? How do I manage this process? Where's the terminology for this? Who do I ask permission from? Eventually it just becomes unmanageable. So what is WordForge actually focusing on developing? We're looking at process-driven and standards-based tools for localization. So process being, we want to formalize and have a system that integrates good process, that people don't have to learn or reinvent the wheel in creating process. They can learn from others who have developed good process. Standards-based tools, that we actually are adopting tools that, and standards that are used by the localization industry. Because there is actually a whole professional industry that focuses on localization, which has had very little, there's very little crossover between open source localization and that professional industry. Our focus is on digitally endangered languages, but what we develop is actually a benefit to a lot of other people, and probably the first adopters will be teams who localize for large languages. So why standards-based formats? The formats that we're looking at is XLIF, which is for localization interchange. It's very much, in concept, the same idea as PO files that we use now, but has the sophistication that it can embody a lot more information. TMX, which is a translation memory interchange format, so you can share existing translations. TBX, so that you can actually build and share terminology across projects. The main idea is that we want to share information. We have people who are translating, and every day they translate, they're creating translation memory resources, but we're not sharing them between OpenOffice and Mozilla. We're creating our silos of information. And the terminology, the TBX stuff, so that we actually create good terminology that is shared, so we raise the quality. So we want to look at, so the power of the standards is that we can actually create tools that focus on being good at working with the files that we have, instead of having to keep reinventing the wheel of, we'll make this tool now work with something else, or we can focus on creating really, really good tools and almost abstract away the difficulty of getting into that standard format. And also the power of XLIF allows us, especially in the context which affects most digitally endangered languages, is that people cannot connect and sit online, is that the XLIF file allows us to store the translation memory and glossaries within that file so that their offline tool can use that. So they have all the information that they would need to be able to do a good translation. So why is it really important that we have good process? Probably the most important thing is that good process is going to lead, hopefully, to better translations. So people who are new at translating will see a good process and think, oh, this is quite logical, let me adopt it, instead of having to discover that 6 months down the line that actually that might have been a better way to do if they'd followed a good process. Whereas if they are introduced to good process, it means we can start from the beginning. The importance of good process as well, and this is in some of it is related to goal setting, is that we can allow small teams to focus on the applications that will have the highest impact, which they might not necessarily think about it when they first start. And that certainly happened with our team, where we localized KDE, but the reality, if we expressed our objective, which was to get free software into people's languages, is in South Africa no one used KDE. So the effort of localizing that was useful for the two or three people who used KDE or Linux in those languages. But a focus on OpenOffice or Mozilla would have had a higher impact. So process involves that as well, helping direct people so that their objectives match with the software that they translate. And so good process then allows those teams to deliver on their strategic objectives. So even good process that allows them to localize OpenOffice Writer before Calc and Impress has a higher impact and allows them to really address their need. If they focus and say, we want to produce a word processor, just the word processor component, that allows people to write, then focusing them on that aspect allows them to deliver. So a good process allows us to scale, and that's the process that involves interaction with upstream people. So the interaction between localizers and OpenOffice, the handover from completed work back to OpenOffice. That's all part of process, and if we can optimize that and reduce the amount of effort, then we can scale. It's really important, and a lot of digitally endangered languages and other languages avoid this because it's difficult, or there are not tools to really help them, is that the actual effort of building glossaries and enhancing glossaries. Glossaries are a great way to influence new translators. When they see the suggestion that we should be translating browser as this word, they're more likely to use it than if they're sitting with the situation where if they have to look it up, they're not going to do it. And if they have to guess, they're going to get it wrong. And it's also very helpful for old translators just to create consistency, because they see a reminder of the words that they use, and we get consistency through the whole translation. And it's good to disambiguate terms, which is often a problem in a lot of languages. So using glossaries as well helps us to standardize the languages that actually have no terminology, which would be a lot of ours. Translation memory, in fact, operates in a similar way, allowing us to guide and influence new translators to say, this is how previous people have translated it, and help them. So it might not be an exact match between the one they're translating and the suggestion, but they can see the differences and they can see the style that's used, and actually we start getting quicker translation, but a consistency in feel. Where we're sitting now with the WordForge tools, we have the translation toolkit, which allows us to convert OpenOffice to the PO format. We also can convert Mozilla files to the PO format, and the reason for doing that is that we want, and it's the same reason of why we were looking very closely at XLIF, is that it allows people to focus on learning one tool and to be an expert in that tool. We don't expect coders to learn a new tool for every project that they code on. They code any language, they can probably use one IDE or VI if they so choose. But they don't have to learn a new tool just to code. And unfortunately, that's what projects are expecting localizers to do. Mozilla has their own tool. So if you were localizing Mozilla and KDE, you'd use KBabel, or you're doing KDE and you'd use Mozilla Translator for doing Mozilla. Which means that all your information that you've generated, your translation memories, everything like that, your skill at just using the tool is lost, and you have to relearn it. So by converting to PO, we allow people to use one tool. And it's the same idea why we're moving to XLIF would be that we can have a richer format, but also that the person uses one tool. As the other things that we have in the translation toolkit are obviously the other filters, but it's also there's a range of checkers which do things like identify the 13 styles of variables used in OpenOffice and the 5 or 6 used in Mozilla. So we have situations where translators will translate percentage, program name, percentage into their local language, no matter how hard you train them. People will do that, and those tools allow us to pick that up and actually pick it up early and say, well, especially when we integrate that into the offline editor and the online editor, we have the power to say, you've made a mistake, now fix it. So there's a quick learning process. Pootle is our other piece of software, which is a translation management system. So it's managing the process of translation. Within that now we have the ability to set goals, the ability to develop a glossary and use a glossary, the ability to reuse old translations with translation memory. And it's becoming standards-based. So we can download XLIF files, you can upload XLIF files with your new translations, we can use PO files. Pootle editor, we separate these conceptually, although most people's concept of Pootle is the editor. But Pootle is a translation management system designed to manage the process. And it has an editor, so people who do online translation can use that editor. But we like to distinguish the two because we're also developing an XLIF based offline editor, specifically aimed at people who cannot be online to translate. And also people who don't like the web idea, which is not a rich interface. So this is a basic idea of the working of Pootle and the translation management system. It's a generalized idea, and some of its concepts that we had to just form names for and ideas for. But essentially we start with the FOSS project, which would be, let's use the example of OpenOffice. So we have OpenOffice, which has, and we don't really care what formats people use, because they should be driven by the needs of translation, but it shouldn't dictate to them. The filters that we use, OO to PO and others, allow us to transform that into something that can be translated. And then we have the role of the project liaison, which would be the person who can translate the needs of the open source project into something that we can use in Poodle. And the project liaison could be a script. It doesn't need to be a real person. But we have things there such as, what are the things you should be translating? Should you be translating 2.0.4? Or should we be translating 2.0.3? When will 2.0.4 be released? What is the minimum requirement to get into 2.0.4? And some of those need a human to do that. So they're defining, what are the release dates, what are your goals, etc. So essentially we have the injection of untranslated messages that people can begin to translate. We have the translation memory, so from that we can reuse what your existing translations, inject that into files that need to be translated as suggestions. Within that we have glossary tools. We haven't developed one, but an offline glossary tool essentially could be injecting data into Poodle that gets injected into your files. They're sent to be translated, so that's either online or offline, but a translator has the role of translating that, either approving translation memory suggestions or translating from scratch. And they're working on an offline editor. There's real-time feedback from their testing tools, which is really reusing the testing tools we've created in the toolkit, which would be the same as the online editor. So we're getting really nice reuse, but it's catching those bugs early. But the things that we catch are translating variables, forgetting accelerator keys, translating acronyms when you shouldn't be, not translating words when you should be, punctuation mistakes, space mistakes, all sorts of simple things like that that are often common mistakes that are sometimes crucial in the translation. So a space at the end of a sentence, which probably shouldn't be there, but if you don't put it in there, you're going to get rendering issues. So we've translated the files, we send it back, the new translations become part of our translation memory, which can be audited and managed by other people. And then we go to the review process, which would be reviewing those translations. And that role and the process that people follow, some people follow the translator translates, reviewer reviews, approve. Some people follow a process that's slightly different, which would be translator translates, reviewer suggests corrections, and the translator implements it. But the process that we follow is less important than the stages that it goes through. So a reviewer reviews that, and then a localization supervisor, which we see as someone who's broken that silo in some ways, so they're looking at the cross-language issues, or maybe just the language issue, OpenOffice in Zulu. And they're signing off those translations. Once they're signed off, they go back to the project liaison, who's the person who upstreams that, or the script that upstreams that. Going through filters to convert back, so we're converting from PO or Excel format back to OpenOffice. So we sit at OpenOffice with a GSR file that's been translated, reviewed, and approved, and injected back. And it's been managed through that process to know that people know what they need to translate to get in, and whether they've met deadlines. In terms of what I would call our ultimate vision, is where would we love to be if there were no constraints on resources? The first thing would be that Poodle fits the needs of a team. And a team, like I said before, often people define it as the open office localization. But we'd love to see things where people can say, we are the Zulu localizers, and we happen to localize a number of products. Or to see things, the general form, which would be, this is a Poodle server that manages openoffice.org localizations for a whole lot of language teams. And of course, the related thing, so that there is an OpenOffice Poodle managing a whole lot of translations, but there's also a Zulu Poodle that can feed translations that people do in their language context, but that are going upstream. And the links between those happen. How they happen, we'll see. And that Poodle shares information, so that there's terminology development that can happen across. That's my alarm. So the terminology development can be shared across all all projects that translate. And that translation memory can be shared across all projects that translate. But that we're not in a situation where we're saying to KDE, no, we're taking your translations away from you when there's an existing KDE community. But that we're enhancing existing translation communities, not moving things away. And that Pootle is adaptable, that we're not prescribing processes to people, but that we're really implementing the processes that exist already. And that we, that it's not so much prescription, but it's really good suggestion. Because we can't, you can't do a review, translate, review, approve when you are the only translator for Vietnamese. Obviously the reality is that you could pretend to be the reviewer as well, which Clarity probably does do. The status of WordForge at the moment, the toolkit is mature and in production. People are using it now. Pootle very stable with integrated glossaries, TM, and goals. The toolkit has functionality for XLIF, TMX, and TBX now. The status of Word, the Pootle component of WordForge, that's our merger focus now. We're migrating Pootle to work with XLIF. How we implement that behind the scenes, we'll decide. But essentially, XLIF will be a major format for people to be working with it. We're looking at a lot of refactoring. We're integrating Debian's Summer of Code project, which was to build a database backend. I personally hate databases, but this project has worked really well. In terms of understanding the complexities of, because in some ways what we're storing, we realized, is a whole lot of metadata around files that we translate, and it's worked out really well. Improving the user experience, because some places are just really crafty and horrible, and we're getting a lot of people helping in that. And creating the hooks that will allow us to do the fancy process management that we want to do. In terms of relationships that we have with people that are using this, WordForge firstly is open source software, which I say that just because it creates all the environment necessary to create collaboration. Without something being open source software, it's just something that you are gifted and you're grateful, but you don't actually become an integral contributor. Who's using it now? Knowingly or unknowingly, all of OpenOffice community localizers are using it, because they get Pavel's PO files. Almost all the new languages in Mozilla use it. Rosetta uses OO to PO for their OpenOffice localization and have contributed fixes to it, a lot of that. Communities that are starting to use it, the Arabic community, there's been interest from the Brazilian Portuguese community, the Georgian community. I hope they use it, but they definitely talk about it. Obviously ourselves, translate.org.tz and Javier from Quimeros. Creative Commons uses it. And the Creative Commons example is an exciting example. I just happened to meet the guys who needed to do it. And within the space of an afternoon, they had set up their own Pootle server, which managed their needs for translation. And so if you go to translate.creativecommons.org, you'll see Pootle running in their branding. Code contributions, Debian again, through the Summer of Code, has contributed a database backend. Community-driven glossaries, we've got a number of translators who see Pootle as an opportunity to create a good glossary that gets shared by anyone who installs Pootle. And the Arabic team has been very good at correcting all the problems with right-to-left languages, which all our languages are left-to-right, so we don't care about right-to-left. So a community contribution to address their need shows, for us again, the power of open source. The project, at the moment, we're supported by the Open Society Institute and IDRC, and lots of volunteers. In terms of your possible involvement, we really need coders, because finding people who can localize and can code is next to impossible. So if you can code and you have a passion for language and localization, then we'd love to hear from you. If you can't code, but everyone knows someone who can, just bribe them, convince them, bundle them in cars late at night and send them to South Africa. That'll scare them, tickle them. If you know non-coders, there's lots of stuff that people can help with. Unfortunately, we need more coders than non-coders. But we really value the community contribution. So, any comments? I'm not going to do, well, I might do a closer demonstration. But any questions or comments about the talk? Dictionaries, but you have a lot of domains that are really new. So, what is the terminology you want to use for maths and science? So, what is the terminology we want to use for computer terms? Browser, word processor, spreadsheet. That's not standardized.
What technical skills are you looking for?
Python, coders. It's as simple as that.
Might be interesting to say is why when we have PO5s and everybody's using PO5s for translate, why change to XD?
Do you understand that?
Yeah. And the reason why we want to do that is because XD is an excellent format. It allows us to put a lot of information on the file itself, and especially all the process information. We are very concerned about the time of the translators and the reviewers. So we tend to work with very large PO files, 1,000 messages, in which we have a small upgrade of 3 messages. The translator has no problem, goes, okay, 3 messages, I translate. But then the reviewer comes and says, which ones did you change? Which ones did you translate? And these 3 files allows us to say, by the way, the translator did those 3. So the reviewer knows that within those 3, we can put in the XD file the result of the tests. We can put on the file if any of the variables is missing. We can put on the file if the glossary was followed or not. So the information that we give to the reviewer through the process is what really is going to help us maintain the software, translate better. We can feed, we can put the whole glossary that we have. We can analyze a translatable file and say, okay, we have this 200 glossary words on this file. We put them on the file. And then we hand the file to the translator so that in the same file that he has the messages that he needs to translate, he has also, or she has also, the terminology. And the offline editor or the online editor can just write those words in a different color. So these are terminology words. And it can put a list on the side saying, these are the translations. And if you don't use them, can keep your red flag saying, wait, why did not use, you did not use the terminology? The editor can allow you to do that or not allow you to do that, depending on what kind of process you're following. So we can really improve the quality of the translations using technology. And this technology is based on information that we can put on the XD files, but that we could not put on the PO files. That's why we really want to change the next step that is XD format.
So in terms of the toolkits as well, we have the PO XLIF implementation, which is the one, I can never pronounce the guy's name, but there is a PO, a way of representing PO formats in XLIF, which we have implemented. And there are lots of powers with XLIF. The one thing that Javier didn't mention was, and it affects specifically languages in Africa, where you have Francophony and Lusophone countries who people can't read English, but they can translate from Portuguese or from French. And to be able to supply translations in French to be translated into a local language becomes really powerful and becomes quite easy with XLIF because you can put the English and the French in the same file.
Instead of having to go through basic English all of the time, since the PO document is very Anglo-centric, by design.
Yeah.
But you will need to use always English as a reference in order to track the changes, because only with the source language you know exactly, you know, which are the changes in the language, not for the French one, but for the source language.
But what we propose is to have also the French on the file, in addition to the English.
In addition to
the
English.
And the editor, you can see both of them. You can be, you know, with the switch in between the English or the French, or when you're translating, you're looking at the French. But then the English will always go back. So you always have the English reference for the technical part, but the translator is looking at the French when he's doing the translation.
Yeah, but it is important for the translator to know which is the latest, you know, status. Is the French or the English that gives you, that's the important thing, you know, to know what is really new, what has changed. There is always one language which is the source.
Yeah.
It cannot be two.
And it's, I think also the power, we can get around it now with PO files, but they're just simple things, like what was the previous translation and what changed? Mm-hmm. You don't know. When people just say, oh, use diff, which is great for someone who programs, but for someone who is an expert in their language but not a command line junkie, to do a diff and to see some unified diff and understand it. And PO doesn't necessarily have that power. We don't know. It becomes very difficult to know what changed in the English. And then, how should I change my translation? To know that it was just a spelling correction, and know that it's a minor change, it's not going to affect you. Especially if it's a whole paragraph that you have to now reread, check everything. So that's optimizing.
At SUSE, if I may comment on a real life example, we had, SUSE had for the manuals, which were once written in tech, tried to switch over to PO. And after a year and a half, they switched back to, or they moved on to XML files, because PO proved to be too stubborn when the same term was in the same chapter or in the same PO file had, and in two different local, in two different places, different translations, or required two different translations. With ambiguous terms, or with terms which really in a context had another slightly different meaning that you had to translate into a different term in the target language. And another problem that was present in the German when translating from German to English, which happened before they got bought by Novell, was that the German allowed for split sentences. Instead of the English saying, well, the example goes like this and continues like this, you would have the sentence split and the example put in the middle. And then PO would make two distinct parts that you couldn't connect anymore, because sometimes the sequence of the text would get lost, and within the PO file it would get jumbled up, so you would have to go back and try to see how the original looked like, and you had to look at three different windows, one window with the PO with Kable, one window with the diff, and one window with the original, so the diff wouldn't get too confusing. And with the XML files, I actually ran XXDiff, a graphical diff, when merging partial translations or partial amendments to text back into the original translation. But it was not pretty, and it was not. It took a lot of time, and it cost a lot of effort and money. Resources, which if the computer program, what are computers there for, if not to recognize or to be able to recognize such patterns, could have, if there existed a useful tool to do that, could have relieved the company from spending. So how are you addressing, for instance, split sentences, stuff that you really have to or cannot have in a blob,
well,
in the target language, while the PO file tells you this is one blob.
Well, actually, one is X. We address the whole this ambiguation thing slightly differently, because we have to do it with OpenOffice. So we use, in our tools, use KDE comments to disambiguate some of the words that would address the one problem. But that's the PO problem that's described is that. And it is a very English-centric thing, that we use nouns and verbs interchangeably and don't really care if it's manual or manual. Manual process, manual, the manual. And it is the English nature of PO files that create some of those problems. So we address the one, in terms of when we work with OpenOffice and convert it to PR, we use KDE comments, which to some degree. So that's the first thing. In terms of split sentences, I'm not sure there actually is a solution. Most things I do is to tell programmers that they should realize that languages can't, because it's almost impossible to deal with it. We have it in Afrikaans, and it's probably many other languages. A split sentence is wonderful because Afrikaans changes the word order. So without knowing the context of which bit goes with which, the translator will translate the split in its individual context, so you'll get two reversed sentences in the wrong place. So the reality is, to make that localizable by most languages, you should never have a context of a split sentence.
I would always write about it in such a case, if I would have to.
Should be avoided.
You know, at the beginning we had that, you know, in the office, you know, the open office.
Well, in the end, the style the manuals were written in the original German was changed just to address this problem, and there were no split sentences in later revisions.
That's the way I would address it.
But that is, of course, the human changing or adapting in order to compensate for a shortcoming of software.
Well, I don't think it's a shortcoming of software, because unless you've got a way to link those two sentences, you can't anticipate the needs of the language that you're going to translate into. You don't. That's the problem with PO format, is that a lot of its logic is based on English, and they've had to add features to address the realization that not all languages have a simple plural form that goes zero file, one file, you know, files, file, files, and suddenly realizing there's Polish that has file format. And the reality is, it's much easier to find the neutral but acceptable form in the source document that doesn't affect other languages. Because otherwise, the reality is you can't anticipate what languages will need.
If I can add a comment here, you know, people, you know, write in the source, so they have to write the source in such a way that it is possible to localize it. You cannot just say this is English and we say it. You have to write in a way that it is possible to localize. This is why there are also special guidelines to follow, you know, when you write the source language.
The one process that I've seen missing in open source localization, and I don't think it will necessarily change, but I've seen it in one context of localizing where they actually write text and they actually then annotate text. They actually have a team of people who go through the document addressing issues that they know localizers will be affected by. So they'll look and say, this term is talking about the user using the application or whatever. So where there's terminology that could be ambiguous, they'll actually define what the context is that's meant. Whether that would help, certainly that, if they had that process, the first thing that person would do is send the text back and say, make this one sentence. That would be the simple guideline. But that's a useful process that we don't do in open source, to actually annotate the text that we translate in. Any other questions?
Yeah, I had one question about build farms. I heard you connecting OpenOffice.org localization to build farm. Have you already realized that, or
We have been building. Whether we could call it a build farm and whether we've achieved that, no, we haven't. The one thing we looked at, we've integrated into Pootle, is the ability to actually download SDF files or GSR files. So the infrastructure's there for any team that would want to. You can actually hook onto it and pull an SDF file that could go into a build system and build with the latest translations that are approved.
And do we have the ability to find out which contributor translated which frame?
Mostly that's dealing with the limitations of PO files and not wanting to add too much stuff. But with the stuff that Debian's done in terms of being able to put metadata, I think the Debian design of the database has been really good, because it's, in a simple abstraction, it's source string, target string, with metadata, and the metadata can be anything, literally. So we have an association, this is a file with translations. There's no concept of being a PO file or an XLIF file, that's translations that are associated, and metadata associated with that. So you could just then store, this was the translator, this was the reviewer, what we do with that information, pumping it back into XLIF when we pull it out, the possibilities are endless. But that's the model that has been created by that, I think, is quite powerful because it allows us to put any process onto it. We just tag things with metadata.
So right now we should just assign a certain field byte to certain transaction and pages,
etc. Sorry?
So the way it is now, we should assign go or permissions one field byte to one translator hasn't finished the work. Is that how we should?
Well, the current situation in Pivotal, you can have separate managers for projects. So you can manage the Georgian Open Office team. You can have people that you can assign to that project. So you can say these five people can translate, and you can assign individual work. You can actually get it to randomly assign strings across the project. So you'd say assign the whole project to these five people. The reason why it works like that is we first started using the tool in the context of translatathons. We have assumed this was a room full of translators, and we have 20 of you, and we want you to translate this stuff. So we didn't want to go, this person must do this. We just say, these are 20 people, assign the work. But in a project context, in fact, in any context, it helps to put one person on that file so that they have responsibility for that. You still, if you have five people translating, you still have the problems of consistency across those five people. But at least if you have one file, it's manageable. And even if you could split the file, I wouldn't even recommend it, even if the technology could do that.
How about the online translation? Do we have any features that enable us to use online translation or existing glossary?
Sorry?
I'm talking about...
to reuse your own?
Yeah.
No. Basically, what
compendiums or something like that you can use in KBM.
Well, we can. Basically, what Pivotal does now is there are two aspects. One is that you can build a community glossary, and that will always be available when you're translating online, not offline.
Meaning available, meaning having it handed to you as reference to, or having.
Well, without having the visual thing there, you see the source text, and you're typing your target text. And all the words that it identifies as being part of your glossary will be there.
It's so, a suggestion.
Yeah, on the side with word processor and then the translation in your language. And also translation memory. So if the phrase is, do you want to save the document?
Yeah.
And you have, do you want to save the file? It will be there as a suggestion. But it's not, you can't see, we haven't got the functionality which says, show me only my previous translations as suggestions. It'll give you the whole.
Yeah. Oh, but that's an interesting feature.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we were talking about at the Debian conference is allowing a specific translator that belongs to the group that can translate something to actually claim files. What is the word that you use that says, I am translating this? So that there's information to the other translators.
We talked about
so
booking translation.
So the translator says, I am booking this.
So it's the reverse of assigning.
Yeah.
Is the reverse? Yeah. But
a complement, not the reverse.
User driven.
Actually, we just translated our current work method to our needs. So we said you.
And Red Hat and their system has a very similar.
Yes,
you basically
yes,
say.
We call it. We call this actually booking. We call this intent to translate. But that's
you download and
that's
you upload.
Yeah, that's very useful.
But coordinates will also assign goals and assign differences. Actually, if there's a coordinator, you just ask people and just assign goals. So,
How about the counterfeit? How about accounting for the volume translated? Once that you enter an environment in which you're being paid for the work that you do, one of the problems that, of course, that we actually had translating the SUSE manuals was finding out how much volume, how much work was actually performed in order to later use it as a basis to write invoices and get your compensation for it. Is that already possible or built into the structure?
Well, part of it, and it's not now, but part of the doable thing is PO files have a concept of strings which has no bearing on the reality of the amount of work involved. So we already count words as opposed to strings, which is a much better reflection of the amount of work. Tracking individuals and how much work they've done, no, we're not doing that.
Actually, we didn't ask for it in Debian. That's surprising.
Why not?
I don't know.
I think it's very useful, though.
It's essential if you want to get
it. It's essential if you're paying for it, but if you want to.
Yes, but once that you have, you know, someone in the industry saying, I want to support this project, I'm going to hire 2 translators to work for me. You have to know how much those translators, as opposed to the 8 others that are doing it for free, are going to get out of their, I mean, out of their input. You have to be able to split that and account for that. So it would help industry, so it would boost or give the opportunity for a certain involvement of the industry, which is measurable.
Yeah.
Actually, yes, I do agree. I was joking because we didn't request for it, but actually I think it's
interesting.
Also for tracking purposes, you know, to see how much, if you have such a volume, you know, like 200 words, you know, I want to know if they have, like, translated 50 words or,
Well, the thing as well, which is one of my desires, is we always measure progress in terms of completeness. So if you are the one person Vietnamese team, you'll never beat the Italians, because the week before you think, aha, I'm beating them, and then they finish everything in a week. So it's not very encouraging. But if you had a concept of like, what is your speed, or what is your, you know, what's your average contribution in this team? Suddenly the Vietnamese team is the top of the pile because one person's doing 2,000 words a day, and changing the dynamics of how we encourage and reward people. Thank you very much. If you want to ask any more questions, I will be outside.